The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Unlimited broadband so you can download, upload and stream as much as you like.
Hello there and welcome to our weekly podcast. This is a compilation of our best interviews from the past 5 days, all in one place. And so this week, last December at just 7 years of age, Saoirse Ruan was diagnosed with a rare tumour in her tibia. Saoirse's mother, Rosanna, spoke to me about what has been a difficult few months for their family and the prosthetics Saoirse needs after undergoing life-changing surgery to amputate her right leg. Kat Gundry-Beck is an Irish photographer living in Iceland, and she joined me on the line from the land of fire and ice to tell me what life there is like during the COVID-19 pandemic. And after hearing my chat with Kat, Iceland native Reverend Ása Björk Ólafsdóttir got in touch to tell me how she ended up in Dunleary. Freya Lewis was like any normal teenager when she went to see Ariana Grande at the Manchester Arena in May 2017. She talked to me about that awful attack that robbed her of her best friend and almost her life. And Tricia Lewis talked to me about weight loss, getting out of your own way, and her inspirational story of transformation. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy. 9.32. Last year, as I was getting ready to get the toy show together that Friday morning, a seven-year-old girl in County Galway was having a very different experience, and I want to talk to her mum about that. Rosanna Ruan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ryan. How
are you? It's nice to talk to you. Thank you. Tell me about Saoirse before the toy show day. What are we dealing with in terms of a curious, delightful young child?
Yeah, absolutely. Very talented, very energetic girl, very affectionate girl, mm-hmm. and just your normal seven-year-old, you know, going to school every day and doing her activities outside of school. No worries at all in the world.
Okay.
Very happy, yeah.
And then we get to kind of late November and she's limping a bit.
Yeah, she came home with kind of a pain in her ankle, and then that, within about a week and a half, developed into a limp, which then, on observing it, kind of turned into her leg kind of nearly turned out the way a bit. So because of that, then we had examined it ourselves and felt that there was nothing wrong, but we brought her to the GP then, and it was that particular Friday that the GP referred us to A&E for an X-ray.
And when did you go to the A&E?
That Friday.
Straight away?
Yeah. My husband brought her in because my other little one had been in the doctors as well,
sure.
and she had an ear infection.
What did you think it was? I mean, a limp and a sore leg. Did you think it was? I presume you thought it was an innocent little thing.
We honestly did. We did. Yeah, we just thought, you know, this is a sprain now or something, because I've never experienced a break, thank God. So we really didn't even think it was anything of that seriousness. So when she was sent home from A&E with what they told us was a broken bone in her ankle, we mm-hmm. were completely shocked.
And when you got home, what did you do when you had that news? What were you thinking?
So she came home, she was very upset, you know. There was a lot of cuddles, and we snuggled up to watch you, of course. And it was just like, I was gutted, because mum's guilt. How did I not know she was limping around on a broken bone? And the pain she must have been feeling must have been a lot worse than what I thought. So I suppose it was, and then I remember someone was here visiting on the Saturday, and they had said, well, aren't you lucky it wasn't anything worse? And we were saying, yeah, thank God.
Yeah, it could have been worse. Which takes you to what? You went to get an MRI?
So that takes us to Sunday, where the orthopaedics rang us.
Yeah.
Said they were looking at the X-ray and they weren't happy with it. And we went and did a full day of tests. And that night they wanted to admit her. And that's when we went up to the ward. The team were there to meet us, and we just knew straight away something wasn't right.
When you go in and when you say you know something wasn't right, is it the mood or is it the faces of the staff or is it an instinct?
We were told that we wouldn't see the team until the following day. And when we landed on the corridor, they basically literally turned around and put out their hands and started introducing themselves to us. And I'd never experienced anything like that before.
And then brought us into
a room. And, you know, Dr. Fenton Shannon, a gentleman, spoke to Saoirse and asked her the normal few questions. And then he brought us out into our own room, and that's when it all felt very... I just knew, going into the office with him, and there was three staff members, I just knew when we were going in there, we weren't going to come out the same, that there was something going down, and it was very, very scary.
And what did he tell you?
He basically said that they were looking at an infection or a tumour. An infection just faded into the background for us. It was, you know, tumour, think the worst. And, you know, they were very quick grind. They let us home that night with Saoirse, and they had us back in for an MRI the following morning. And he came to me himself and said, you know, have you somewhere to stay in Dublin the Monday night? And he said, you know, get organised, get up there. You'll be in Crumlin for a biopsy on Tuesday morning. So from Friday to Tuesday, all that happened. And we were told we wouldn't even have the biopsy results for a week. But that day, there and then, they told us that infection was ruled out. So we were dealing with a tumour.
And can you tell us what sort of tumour it was?
Yeah, so it's like a bone cancer. It's osteosarcoma. It's a very rare tumour. You'd have maybe 3 children in Ireland every year diagnosed with this under the age of 16.
A tiny number.
Very tiny when you think about the population of Ireland.
Hmm.
And then unfortunately, Ryan, it didn't end there for us because she commenced chemo in December. And they had just mentioned, you know, because of where the tumour was situated in her ankle, that they may have to look at surgery on the ankle, and amputation was suggested, but it wasn't until January that we found out for definite that that was the case. So she had her just under her right leg amputated in March.
In March, just gone by.
Just gone, yeah.
How do you talk to a 7-year-old about the enormity of such an operation for her life, for her psychology, for her physicality, for yourselves?
I don't know, Ryan. It was so hard to get our heads around it ourselves first. And I remember asking that so often. How do we tell her?
Mm.
How do you tell a child this news? Like a little innocent child who has no worries. And, you know, you're meant to be protecting them in the world from everything bad. And you've no control over this. So we spoke to the team a lot. And, you know, they had prepped us and they had kind of said, you know, be honest with her. And, you know, there's a trust there that you can't break. So we were very honest with her, but we kind of, you know, first of all, we told her she'd tumour, which she didn't understand. And then we knew she'd understand the word cancer. So, you know, we picked our time to tell her that. And that was traumatising. You know, telling her that she was going to lose her hair, she was growing it for her communion. That was another blow. And then, oh, to tell her that they were going to take her leg was just,
God,
it was horrific.
No, I can't. When you did do it, who was in the room?
We asked the oncologist to come with myself and my husband, Ollie.
Yeah.
Ollie was coming up for a team meeting and we had chose to, you know, these couple of days that we'd be together with her in the hospital. We'd never told her anything bad at home. It's always
okay.
Hospital-based.
Yeah. That was clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, just put a context on it and to associate it always with the hospital is where
yes.
the medical things happen. That was a really smart move.
Yeah.
And home is where the safety and the hugs.
Exactly.
And yeah, that's really
good.
Yeah.
So Dr. Michael Capra is her oncologist. He's amazing. And he came in and he basically let us do the talking, but he was a great support to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, she was scared. She was angry. She, you know, she lashed out and as you would. And it was very hard on us all. Everybody had tears.
Who did she lash out at?
I suppose she just looked straight at us, you know, with the shock. Is this happening? And I suppose looking at us as if to say, are you letting this happen? You know, you look to your parents, the people that you trust. And we'd kind of break it down in a way that she'd understand what we were doing. But, it took a couple of weeks for her to understand and baby feeding her the news.
It is so much for one so young to take in.
Yeah.
And yet you had to do it. I mean, you couldn't just put her into the knife,
no.
as it were, and say, you know, we'll talk to you tomorrow. But that's
no.
that's enormous. Go on.
As it was, Ryan, sorry.
No, please.
This, like telling her this, and she's gone through a very intense chemo, had lost the hair. You know, she's gone through so much already.
God.
And it was just like, really, who is pulling all these strings? Because, you know, it felt very unfair.
You doubted your faith if you had any.
You do doubt it. You do doubt it. You question it, all right, yeah.
You had to come up, I'm just trying to think of the timings. You came up on, was it St. Patrick's night to Dublin?
That's right, yeah, for admission, and she had the surgery the following morning.
And was COVID starting to...
Yeah, COVID had kicked in. So our trips had become, you know, our little trips to Dublin when we'd go up for chemo, I'd do chemo with her, and we'd usually maybe go on a Sunday night and we'd stop for an ice cream on the way up. That was our little routine. And we might be there till Thursday, Friday. And on the way down then, we'd go into the Plaza in Kinnegad for our drive-through chips. And, you know, it made it something to look forward to.
Definitely.
Going up and going down. So COVID had a huge impact on that. We used to just go straight up, straight down. Even the hospital environment, everything shut down. The playroom, a lot of the resources, which they're fantastic resources, you know. The school, she was doing a bit of schooling every day when she was up there. That's all stopped at the moment. So it does. It does make it very difficult. It was a lonely journey up, Ryan. It really was. Heading in, like, you know that your daughter's going to go down to theatre with, you know, 10 toes and she's going to come back with 5. And I don't know, do you ever really get your head around that?
And the operation took place on what day?
The 18th of March.
How did it go? I mean, I don't know if that's the right question, but how, tell me about the next day when you went in to see a changed child physically, but yet your daughter, Asirsha, alive, which is the critical point, I suppose, in some ways. But how was it for you?
That 4 hours that she was gone was hard, very hard. I mean, we had wondered how would we pass those 4 hours? You know, how would we have the strength? And we couldn't really go anywhere. The communal areas were shut down in Ronald McDonald, and we just went to the room and just sat there. And the team then came to tell us that, you know, the surgery was successful. That was fantastic. That was the news we wanted to hear. She'd be coming back to the room shortly. And she did. She slept off the anaesthetic. She, you know, they were on top of her pain relief and all of that. It was hard because I suppose it was a first for all of us. And you're trying to be strong, but you're trying to be strong yourself, you know. She came around and I don't know really, Ryan, how we just talked about everything else, I suppose, and told her that she was the best girl, and she turned around to me and she said, you know, I'm really proud of myself.
Wow.
She said, I got rid of my leg, so that means I got rid of my tumour, and I'm very proud of myself. And, you know, that just shocked me.
That's a really good sign.
Yeah.
That's good. Like, if she's thinking that way at 7, it means that I don't think this pain is going to follow her into adulthood as much as it might another.
Yeah, she's a fantastic strength about her and a way of getting her head around things that makes it easier on us in a way.
Did you look? Did you look at where the leg once was together, or did you? You know, did you make a fuss about that, or did you just?
It was all in her own time. Whenever she was ready, the nursing staff were coming in and checking on the wound and the drain attached to it and all of that. And she wasn't ready by any means to look at it that particular evening. We did struggle ourselves, to be honest. But I'd say the following day she was actually out doing physio. She was actually out hopping on her other foot with crutches forward and back. The next day she was able to go to the bathroom. She recovered very well, very quickly. And because of COVID-19, we were anxious to get out of that environment. And the doctors were happy for us to go. If we were happy, they were happy. It's still a raw subject, I suppose. We don't really look at that section, you know. She knows it's gone and that, but she struggled maybe to look at the, you know, when the dressings have been changed and that, she'd struggle a little bit to look at it, you know.
Well, it's very fresh, you know. I mean, don't forget, it's only May.
Yeah.
You know, it's only been there. And do you have any other daughters or sons, can I ask you, kids?
Yeah, we have a little baby girl, Farah Rose. Well, we call her baby girl, but she's 16 months.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
God, you made a lot of work for yourself this year, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
Little did you know.
Little did we know. We're a long time waiting for her as well.
Oh,
but
are
you?
Know,
they get on mighty, so they do. And
isn't that great?
She's a huge distraction, which is brilliant.
Hey, listen, you've got the best gift in the whole world is having two daughters. So take it from one who knows. You're a lucky woman. So
yeah, and she's here laughing.
Does she want to say hello to me, or does she?
Yeah, do you want to say hello? Yeah, hold on.
I'm happy to say hello to her.
Say hi.
Hi.
Saoirse, how are you?
Good.
Tell me about baby girl. Tell me what she's like.
She's cracked.
I'd say she is. What do you mean by that?
Destructive.
And when is she? When do you make her laugh? Can you make her laugh?
Sometimes.
What do you do?
Tickle her.
That's the best way to do it. And how are you feeling, Saoirse?
Good.
How's the leg and with the whole thing with the leg? Are you okay?
Yeah.
What are you doing to do exercises? What do you have to do every day?
I have to try to straighten my leg out.
Yeah. And is that sore to do that, or are you getting used to it now?
I'm kind of getting used to it.
Okay. And do you have to go to school as well on Zoom and everything?
No.
No, that's gone. And who's your best friend?
Oh.
Well, you can say a few of them if you have a few.
Lauren.
Yeah.
Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
Aoife.
Yeah, you've loads of friends.
Lisa.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Keelan.
Well, here, what's going on? I haven't got enough time.
Lucy.
Lucy as well.
And Mia.
Crikey. That's like a bus full of people. That's amazing. So hopefully you get to see them soon when the world gets a bit more normal. Is that right, Saoirse?
Yeah.
And do you think I could meet you someday?
Yeah.
I'd love to meet you someday. So when the world is a bit more normal, I'd love you to come and see me here in RT or something like that, maybe. And we'll say hi and hang out with your mom. Is that okay? Why are you laughing at me? I was only asking you if you want to come out and hang out. You know when you, hey Saoirse, you know when you stop for the special ice cream on the drive?
Yeah.
What ice cream do you normally get?
A 99.
You are a woman of great taste. With the flake in it, I take it. That's the whole 99 thing, isn't it?
Mm.
Okay, we need to get more 99s in the world for you guys for your trips. Okay, Saoirse, I'll see you soon. Add me to that list of your friends now, will you please?
Hmm?
Will you add me to that list of your friends? Can I be one of them now?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. That's made my day. Okay, I'll talk to your mum again just to say thank
Fine,
you to Rosanna.
Thank you.
Oh, would you stop? You have a target to reach funding-wise for prostheses.
Okay.
And the leg will change depending on how old Saoirse is. You need a grand total of how much?
160,000.
How much have you got so far?
I think over the weekend we were successful enough to hit 100,000.
Okay, so we just talk turkey here for a moment. So you need 160, you've got 100. So you've done all the heavy lifting. You're as good as there. And what you have a GoFundMe page. And what I'd say to people tonight, because we've been asking for a lot of, let's say tonight, I forgot where I was, I'm on the radio now, about funding and so on, is we realise people are to the pin of their collar and so on. But this is the sort of thing, this is €60,000 we need. If you are a businessman or a businesswoman who owns a big company that's doing well in Ireland at the moment and feels that they could maybe make that difference to this family and to Saoirse, this could be the game changer for you. So make the donation if you can and get you to the 160 before the week is out. It would be tremendous. It's a GoFundMe page. Is it called?
It's SOS Support Our Saoirse. And just before I go, Ryan, could I just mention that we launched a website at the over the weekend. We're holding Saoirse's Summerfest. On the bank holiday weekend, the 2nd of August.
Okay.
It's an online music festival. And we've some fantastic acts lined up, like Blessed, Cliona Hagen, Rory Stories, The Two Johnnies and The Whistling Donkeys, just to name a few. We've some big news that we can't release just yet, but we're looking for more acts over the next few weeks. So if anyone is interested, please contact them.
You're going to get there. No doubt about it. Save our Saoirse.
Yeah.
Listen, I really enjoyed talking to you and Saoirse today. And lots of love to you and the family.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. We'll see you soon. Keep us posted, won't you, Rosanna?
Will do. Thank you.
All right. See you soon. Mind yourself. Okay. Thank you. Kat Gundry Beck, good morning.
Good morning, Ryan.
How nice to talk to you. How's life?
Life is good. I am in Reykjavik in Iceland
at
the moment.
Now, this is perfect because I've been talking about Iceland the last couple of days because these wonderful books that I've been enjoying, and I've got a real sense of the place in terms of the book itself. But you're from Dublin. How does a gal from Dublin end up in Reykjavik in Iceland? Please tell me.
So I'm a photographer and videographer, so I was really drawn to the beautiful landscape here. So that's what made me move here 2 years ago.
And tell me about the landscape, because I think there was a film, I think Ben Stiller and Walter Mitty was in Iceland for some reason, I have that in my head, but it feels very vast and cold.
Yeah, yeah, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Yeah, it is. It's a very harsh volcanic landscape, but it's also very alive. So there's all of these, you know, bubbling mud pots just out in the nature and all these steam things rising up from the ground. It's just a beautiful place. It's really unusual.
I would imagine. How's the food, Kat?
The food is, it's good. It's very good quality, but it's, you know, you wouldn't travel here for the food, not like Italy.
All right. And so what would be the, you know, the more common sort of dining experience?
The common what, sorry?
Dining experience. Yeah.
Do you know what? Their main dish is actually a thing called kjøttsuppe, which is meat soup, and it's very much like Irish stew, actually.
Well, now that's in itself of interest, because are there any connections between Iceland and Ireland that you know of?
There are a lot of connections. So actually the first settlers in Iceland were Irish monks.
Oh.
And then the Vikings went and took a lot of Irish people and brought them over to Iceland. So I really see it in the culture here, the sense of humour, the sense of community. It's really similar.
And can I ask you how old you are? Do you mind if...
I'm 27.
27. So what does that mean in terms of your lifestyle over there? Is there a great crack? Is it a good social? Are you welcome?
There is good crack. Yeah, I'm very welcome. I'm very, very welcome. I find that, you know, when I meet new people, they're very, very welcoming. I have really good friends here. And we also have an Irish in Iceland group, so we all meet up and go for pints. But I find that it's really easy to kind of just get into the Icelandic culture, especially when you're starting to learn the language. That's when people really start to accept that, you know, you're here and you're here long term.
What are the Iceland? Do you call them Icelanders or Icelandics or what's the?
Yeah, Icelanders.
What are they like? I mean, I know that's like a kind of bizarre question. What are the Irish like? But but in terms of of, you know, sociability and warmth or what have you, how do you find them?
They're very, very warm. Yeah, very warm. And it's this kind of thing that, you know, even though it might take a little while to get to know someone, once someone's friends with you, then they are so loyal and so lovely. And they're so encouraging as well, especially, you know, with me building my business here and with me learning the language. They're just so encouraging and inviting.
And how is the Icelandic language learning going, Kat?
It's very difficult.
Is it?
It's a very difficult language grammatically, but I'm getting there. There's been a few little funny ups and downs, but, you know, one time I was, my friends were teaching me how to say, I agree, which is samola, and then they start talking really fast in Icelandic, so then I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to try and chip in and say, I agree. So they're chatting away, da 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 da, and I say, Yo, samloka, which is sandwich.
And I go, yeah, we were just talking about COVID-19 and now you're talking about lunch, you know?
Yeah, are you hungry? Are you okay? But no, I joined a choir as well, and that's really helpful. So we have this agreement where, you know, those 2 hours a week I am in it. We do not talk English and we sing in Icelandic. And yeah, we sang with Hattari, who are the Eurovision people last year, the guys that were all like dressed in leather screaming into the microphone.
They were wearing leather bondage gear and screaming into the microphone. Did that give us a sense of Iceland as well, or is that just a one-off?
I mean, it gives you a sense of one side of Iceland and kind of this thing that anything goes here.
Okay, so there's a kind of free spirit around the place. And what about then things like the COVID-19 situation over there? I mean, I was only rhapsodizing about how I love living on this island here in Ireland. What about Iceland?
Yeah, so there hasn't been as strict a lockdown here at all. So there's only 2 people in isolation at the moment with COVID. And then we had 1,084 cases. But there was a lot of testing done in the country. So it was one of the most tested countries in the world. So that meant that, you know, people were already in quarantine. And then also they had a tracking device on the phone.
Okay.
So it was kind of like if I was in contact with someone, even though they're a stranger, I would get a notification.
Really? So they're really kind of ahead of the game a little bit. So are they in shutdown, Kat, or still, or is it restricted, or how's the movement?
It's not restricted at all. So we never had... restriction like that, like in Ireland, with the 2 kilometres rule. But, you know, things shut down, but a lot of the restaurants were still open, just kind of adhering to the 2 metre rule. But I mean, for Iceland, it's a funny one because people are kind of almost used to this quarantine life because they have these really bad storms in the winter. So, you know, there are times when we're told, do not leave the house. So it's almost, you know, people are always kind of used to it.
Yeah, but it wasn't such an alien experience or request.
Not really, no. Yeah, no, it's just this time the weather's okay.
So what was the I'm not going to ask you the name of the volcano that caused all that trouble. But it was kind of the last time a lot of people couldn't travel on planes, if you remember correctly.
Yeah.
It was a difficult time. You wouldn't have been there at that time, of course.
No, I wasn't. I was in geography class in school learning about it.
Can you guide me as to how to pronounce it? It was always a bit of a mouthful.
So it's Eyjafjallajökull.
That's exactly what it was. I was about to say it. Tip of my tongue.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, it's when you break it down, it's Eyja, which is island, Fjalla, which is mountain, and then Jökull, which is glacier. But if you want to be able to just say it without learning it, you can just say, I forgot my yogurt. Really fast.
Oh, that's great.
So I forgot my yogurt.
Oh, that's great. Okay. That's
now
great.
Now everyone can say it.
Thanks, Kat. Dazzle your friends, everybody. I forgot my yogurt is now the way to say that. Yeah, we couldn't have our 10th anniversary 10 years ago because I forgot my yogurt and the elf. And I would go, gosh, your Icelandic is impeccable.
It's getting there.
I was struck by reading these wonderful books that I'm reading Rangar Jonsson, I think. The island and the mist and the darkness I was saying earlier on that the women would be called Hermann's daughter and the men would be called, you know, Jonas' son. And is that something to do with daughters and sons?
Exactly. Yeah. So typically you would take your father's name. So if the father was called Magnus, for instance, then
Magnusson.
His daughter would be Magnusson. That's where it comes from. Yeah, exactly. And then Magnus Dottir. So it makes it very complicated for when families are going through the airports with 4 different last names.
That's just an intriguing sidebar to all of that. The Irish living in Iceland, are there many? Is it a group? You said there's a group?
Yeah, I met one Irish girl and we thought, you know, just for the crack, let's start a Facebook group and maybe there'll be 1 or 2 other people. There's now like 70 people in the group.
Oh, right.
And we were all talking about it because we didn't get to have Paddy's Day this year for obvious reasons. So we were kind of talking about, okay, well, what can we do when travel is available again, when we can all meet up again? And we were thinking, you know, we should have an Irish music festival, get some bands from Ireland to come over and play. So if anyone listening wants to get involved in that, please contact me. Yeah.
How?
Good question. So my Instagram, which I have a lot of photos and videos from Iceland as well, if anyone wants to see
that. Yeah, I'd love to see that.
My Instagram is Kat G Beck, CatGBeck.
Kat G Beck, @ Kat G
exactly.
Beck, will get you on Instagram.
Yeah.
You'll see pictures, obviously beautiful pictures, I would imagine. And then people, if you've a band or whatever, you might head over. In fact, I might actually go to that gig myself because I really want to go to Iceland.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone wants to come over for the festival, that would be amazing.
Definitely. Let's make the Irish presence felt in Iceland. I wonder if there's much of an Icelandic presence in Ireland. I've never met anyone from Iceland.
I've met a few people who have lived there before. Yeah, there seems to be something drawing Icelandic people to Ireland.
We call it kindred spirits, possibly.
Yeah, I think so.
Madeline was on to say, I was in Iceland 40 years ago. The nicest dish was London lamb, which was sort of corned beef, but lamb, and was delicious. And could you please ask, Kat, how do you cope with 24 hours of darkness or light? What's that like?
It is interesting. Yeah, it's really interesting. For me as a photographer, it's great because in the winter you get really good quality of light for those 4 hours of the day. And then in summer, it just doesn't get dark whatsoever. So it's really strange when you're going to sleep and it's midnight and it's just sunny outside.
Wow.
It's mad.
Yeah, that is crazy. Really, and it must do all sorts of things to your system, your body and your clock.
Yeah, definitely get a little bit of insomnia, but yeah. You also get a lot of energy in the summer as well.
Okay, okay.
So, yeah, so I feel kind of buzzing now that it's coming into the light time again.
I bet. Roger from Sligo says, I've been to Iceland 3 times on short breaks over the past 5 years, so he's got the bug.
Wow.
It's a great country, and one of my favourite places to go to is the Blue Lagoon Resort, and he said the food is very healthy, the scenery is stunning, a great place for a healthy break. The ice waterfall is worth a visit. I even got to go snow skiing on one of my visits. A great place for music also. So, you know, selling it very well. Another says, that's a different one entirely. I'll come back to that in a little while. But your plan is to keep on living there and just become part of the Icelandic fabric of society, Kat. Is that the plan?
I mean, for now, yeah.
Okay.
For now. I mean, I'm sure Ireland will call me back at some point, or I might stay here forever. But yeah, I'm definitely, yeah, learning the language and just kind of building a business here and making loads of friends. And yeah, I really
great,
love it.
Great. But, well, if I get over there, I'll look you up and I'll see you at that music festival if time's...
Sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds going to be great to see you. So mind yourself, Kat, and take care. And thanks for taking
a call
today. Really good talking to you.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. All right. That's Kat Gundry-Beck joining us, an Irish gal abroad. Her Instagram is at Kat G Beck for things like photographs, but also if you're a band and you think, yeah, when this is all over, I'd love to go to Iceland and play a gig. Wouldn't that be lovely? Let me say hello to the Reverend Ása Björk Ólafsdóttir. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you today?
It's very nice to talk. I was asking when I was talking to Kat Gundry-Beck yesterday about Iceland. She's an Irish girl living over there. And I was wondering, is there anyone from Iceland in Ireland? And the amount of people who called in and said, yes, the Reverend is. The Reverend is. Where are you the Reverend of?
In the Christchurch in Dunleary, the Church of Ireland Church by the People's Park.
Well, what a beautiful place to be the Reverend around.
It is.
What part of Iceland are you from? Not that that makes any...
Yeah, I'm... I grew up mostly in Reykjavik. I was for 5 years on the East Coast there where my parents were teaching.
And now
but Reykjavik would be home.
Okay, and... are Iceland and Ireland very similar? I'm getting the impression that they're very similar, the people and indeed the countries.
Well, the people, definitely. It's slightly warmer here, and they haven't had the beautiful weeks we've had here now, the last few weeks. But the people are sort of a little more straightforward, I think, direct. Mm-hmm. But definitely the sense of humour and all that business is so similar.
And how did you end up from Iceland to here?
I was at crossroads in my life, and I got an email from bishop here.
Yes, yeah.
And through the bishop's office in Iceland, and they asked if there was anyone who might want to have a look at Ireland. And here I am.
And here you are, Lord. I mean, it's just absolutely tremendous that you got from there to here. I wonder, by any chance, have you read those books I was talking about? Are you a reader?
I am a reader, yeah. I read a lot of... Well, I haven't read them in English.
Yes.
But I read a lot in Icelandic. And I don't know if you know the term Christmas book flood.
No, but
that's what happens every year in Iceland in December. There is a flood of new Icelandic novels, and it is such a treat. And everyone I know, is waiting for the new novels and biographies and all those to come out. And if you don't get a book for Christmas, that's a very sad Christmas, Icelanders.
I'm loving Iceland more and more every day. what's the word? Could you say the word again for me?
Well, in English, I would say Christmas book flood.
And in Icelandic?
Jólabókaflóð.
That sounds even better again. And are you enjoying life in Ireland, Reverend?
I really am, yeah. Okay. I've been here 10 years now, so... And not about to leave, so...
Good on you. Well, will you be sure to say hello to me if you see me passing by? I'm a kind of tall, strange-looking creature with probably a blue shirt on.
Okay, I will.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you, Reverend. That's Reverend Ása Björk Ólafsdóttir talking to us originally from Iceland and now living in Ireland. I like that. Shall we give away a trip? Let's do that after this. at 9:29 this Tuesday morning. It's very good to have you with us. 51551 is the text number. Freya Lewis, good morning, Freya.
Good morning.
It's really nice to talk to you. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Great, thank you. Is May a weird month for you? Is it a peculiar time for you?
It is a bit weird, but I suppose this year it's extra weird because all the months just kind of blended into one.
Yeah.
But yeah, Friday the 22nd was very strange. But we had a lovely day. Me and my family went up to Manchester and walked the dog, and it was very strange because it was really quiet. But it was a nice day, and we all kept in positive spirits.
Good on you. I'm going to go straight back to 14-year-old you. You're 17 now, is that right, Freya?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But to 14-year-old you, and I have one, when I say I have one, one of my daughters is, well, she's 15, so I can just absolutely imagine what you were like then in terms of what was making you excited to be 14. Can you give us a sense of what dominates the world order for a 14-year-old?
Music.
Yeah.
Friendship. Friendship's really important in school. Makeup, YouTube, all of that stereotypical girl stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And all these things. And of course, with music in mind, the idea of going to see a concert, and a big concert from a big superstar, must have been very exciting for you.
Yeah, it was. It was my first concert by myself, just with a friend. So that was really exciting not to have adults with me. So it felt very grown up.
Yeah, and your friend. Tell me about your friend.
Nell was so intelligent. She was so kind. She was the bestest friend that I had. She was just always there for me throughout everything. And she was just—I always describe her as the girl that your parents would want your child to be, their child to be friends with. She was just the perfect friend.
What was she? I mean, go back to you and Nell hanging out before, even in the build-up to the gig. I suspect it was the only talk in the town between the pair of you. What you're going to wear, where you're going to go beforehand, what you're going to do. I mean, was it that level of excitement?
Yeah, it was literally, we had a countdown. We FaceTimed every single night and had checklists of what we were going to wear, what makeup we were going to do, what songs we had to learn, all the lyrics we had to be prepared. So, yeah, it was very exciting building up to it. And, yeah, we were very invested in Ariana.
Of course you are. And that sense of excitement brings you to the arena on the 22nd of May 2017. You and Nell heading in through the doors together. What was the parental situation in terms of being let off and collecting? What was the arrangement?
So my dad took me and Nell, and he kind of waited around Manchester until the concert was over. So my dad was the one who was there and was waiting just outside the foyer.
Okay, and you went into the concert, and we're going to get to what happened, the big awfulness, in a minute. But if you can bring us into the happiness of that before, if you know what I'm trying to say here,
yeah.
Freya, yourself and Nell looking at your musical icon on stage. Can you bring us to the excitement of it, the joy of it first?
Yeah, it was really exciting. Obviously, like I said, it was our first concert by ourselves, so it felt really mature. But seeing Ariana, we've become such amazing, really big fans of her. So it was really surreal to see her. And Nell was the happiest I've ever seen her. And we were singing and dancing away, and we didn't sit down the whole entire time. We cried a bit, but it was just perfect.
Did you know every word of every song?
Yeah, but Nell kind of put me to shame. She knew more. I hate it, concerts when I don't know the lyrics, and I think there were a few songs that I was a bit iffy on, which really annoyed me. But yeah, Nell was the giant fan, and she knew every single word.
All right, and I'd be slightly annoying, Dad, in that I'd be encouraging you to do what you did with Nell, which was, will you leave a little bit early so we avoid the crowd? And you did just that.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
My dad, it was kind of a thing that we always used to do at concerts. Just on the last song that an artist would sing, we would leave about a minute before everyone else just to beat the crowd and get to the car park. So that's what my dad told me and Nell to do. So in Ariana's last song, she took my hand and led me down the arena steps, and we went out to meet my dad and headed towards the foyer.
You went to put your drink cup in the bin.
Nell went to put a drink.
Sorry,
yeah.
Nell went to put a drink, and you got your phone out to text your dad.
Yeah. I texted my dad saying, on our way, but I hadn't sent it yet until Nell came back.
Okay, and that's when you saw somebody, a very suspicious, peculiar-looking person.
Yeah.
Tell me about him.
He was stood in the centre of the foyer. He was motionless, and it was a bit strange to me, but I didn't think anything of it because Nell came back and started talking to me, so I just kind of dismissed him from my thoughts and just didn't think anything of it.
What was he wearing, or what stood out?
Just dressed all in black.
Okay. And he had a backpack?
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. And that would come to be an important part of the story, obviously. And you're about to send the text, or you sent the text, is that right, Freya?
Just as everything went wrong, that's when I pressed send to the text to my dad.
And what happened then?
Obviously, there was a loud bang, and I just felt, because Nell had her arm linked in mine, and I felt her slip out of me, and then... Yep, that's when the horrifying nightmare started, and I got up from darkness and felt weird when I stood up and realised that there was blood all over me and I was all numb and I couldn't feel anything and people were running and screaming and it was just terrific.
Is it like the movie, Freya? Is it like that where it's that sort of you can't hear or it's slow motion? Or
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you feel... terrified, or were you too shocked to feel that level of emotion?
Everything felt numb, and I always say it didn't feel real. It definitely felt like a dream, a nightmare. Like I said, everything was definitely slow motion, and I could barely see or hear anything. It was just all very surreal.
And how, in terms of your own body, what had the blast effect of this bomb that the guy you'd seen had detonated? What had it had on your physicality, on yourself?
I had two broken legs, a broken arm, burns, facial injuries, an eye injury, ear injury, basically everything you could think of.
And you had just purchased, like anyone would do, you'd purchased your Ariana Grande T-shirt in a drawstring plastic bag?
Yeah. I bought a T-shirt with Nell before the concert, and unfortunately, with the attack, it kind of melted into my head, so they had to cut that out of my head.
And before all of that, you were still in the shock, looking around you, I take it. And what were people doing around you as you were trying to comprehend what the hell was happening?
It was all very mixed. There were people kind of stood still in shock. And there were people running. It was just mayhem. But Kim and Phil Dick were this amazing couple that saved me and looked after me and kept me alive. And I just they happened to be the first people that came towards me and wanted to help me.
God, thank God for human kindness, I suppose.
Yeah.
When you had looked at one point to your left shoulder, you describe having broken legs. What was happening when you looked at that shoulder?
It's always really gross, but I could see part of my bone of my arm. I had kind of different injuries to it. But a piece of shrapnel had gone through my arm and kind of decided to take a bit of bone with it. So I literally had part of my bone missing from my arm. So we had to do a lot of work on that, and I had an external frame on the outside of it, which held my arm together for God knows how many weeks.
These people are called terrorists because they want you to be terrified and to cause terror in your life, obviously. And as you were looking at this and trying to make sense of it all, you tried to speak or to call out, is that right?
I wanted to know where Nell was. I think I just kept calling for an ambulance.
And... then, more importantly, I suppose, for your own sense of well-being, you managed to hear your dad's voice. That must have been like a beacon of light, was it? What happened?
Yeah, I managed to give Kim and Phil my dad's phone, my home phone number, actually. And eventually it got round to my dad. He kind of fought with the police to get in because they weren't sure if there was going to be a second attack. So they eventually let him in down to the train station where I was. And as soon as I saw him, I just felt the biggest sense of relief because I knew that if my dad was going to be there, then everything was going to be okay.
Okay. And I think one of the first things you asked him was where Nell was.
Yeah.
And he didn't know.
Yeah. He kept asking me the same and I didn't know, and it just kind of made us more stressed. But yeah, we were really unsure at the time.
Okay, and given how broken you were physically, you were one of the first to get to the hospital because you would have been prioritised. Is that right?
Yeah, they put different numbers on different kind of stretches on, you know, the severity of injuries and things. And I was number one, so I went straight into one of the first ambulances because that was the most serious.
God help us. When you came to, ultimately, Freya, you asked your dad the question, where's Nell?
Mm-hmm.
What did he say or do?
That's when he told me that she'd passed away. And I could tell before he even said it because he just went pale and kind of wouldn't look at me and was so upset. And that was, out of all my injuries, that was definitely the worst pain for me because that was the first time I woke up. And to hear that was just, it was just horrendous.
Were you able to handle that information at that point, or were you too sore and sick?
Especially when I first woke up, nothing felt real again. I was so unsure, especially of all the medication things, of what was going on. So I definitely couldn't process it, and I remember just wanting to shut my eyes and go back to sleep so I didn't have to hear any of it. And it definitely wasn't till a couple of weeks later in hospital when it really kind of settled in.
Okay. I have here that you had 29 separate injuries from head to toe.
Yeah.
Can I read them?
Yeah.
Do you mind? I'm not going to upset you if I do that.
No, that's fine.
Are you sure? Because I just think our listeners will get a handle on just how incredible your survival is. You had a shattered left arm, two broken legs, a shrapnel to your left eye, only saved by the fact you were wearing contact lenses, a perforated eardrum, a broken nose, a busted mouth, the loss of several teeth, whiplash, bruising to your left lung, nerve damage in your left hand, multiple lacerations and burns all over your body, and surgeons removed bits of mouth bone from your stomach. It's as gruesome as it sounds, but there's no point in sugarcoating what terrorism is.
Obviously it's horrendous, but my family have always taught me to just look forward and to never be angry or bitter or anything, so I just don't tend to think about that part of it.
I understand. And Ariana Grande came to the hospital.
Yeah.
Do you recall her walking into the room, or how was that experience?
Yeah, I'd just woken up from one of my surgeries, so the medication did not help. And as soon as I saw Ariana, I just had a mental breakdown and was crying, and my heart rate monitor went off, which was really embarrassing because loads of nurses came running in telling me to breathe. But yeah, she was just the most amazing person. She held my hand and she cried with me and she laughed with me and she just made me feel happy again. And I just honestly, I loved her before, but now I absolutely love her. I just have so, so much respect for her.
Did you talk about Nell?
Yeah, we did. It was before she came in. It was definitely the first time that I'd really thought about Nell and I'd gotten upset about her. And for someone so young to deal with that, of me talking about Nell, she was incredible. And she asked me about her, and she laughed along when I told her different memories about her, and she was just incredible.
Can you tell me, I think it's a very lovely gesture that she came to see you, by the way, and I'm glad that she did that for you. And I know that Nell's mum gave you, or at least brought you in, I don't know if she gave it to you, but the small fluffy owl.
Yeah. When I woke up, my dad gave me this owl that I remember seeing on Nell's bed from FaceTime calls. Nell had had it since she was a baby, and Nell's mum wanted to give it to me, so it was next to me on my hospital bed throughout the whole rest of my time in hospital.
And you could sense Nell from it?
Yeah, definitely. It smelt like her. It smelt like her house. It was the perfect way to remember, and it just felt really good having that by my side because it's kind of what got me through it.
You talk a bit about kind of guilt that you survived and Nell didn't, and have you managed to get your head around that, Freya?
There are good days and bad days. definitely at the start in hospital and things, the guilt was horrendous. But luckily I have an amazing family and amazing friends that just if I ever thought like that, I would talk to them and they would talk me out of it, because that's not the way I should feel. But there are definitely days where I have bad days, but they're more good than bad these days.
That's good news to hear. You spent, what, 5.5 weeks in hospital?
Yeah.
14 operations?
Yeah.
And all of that, do you get flashbacks, or are you on the, you know, the road to emotional freedom, if you like?
I've been quite lucky in the sense that I've not needed any psychological help or anything like that thus far. I mean, I don't know what will happen in the future, and I'm open to accept that I might not mentally be okay. But I was so incredibly lucky that right off from the attack, I just had an amazing family to help me deal with things, and all I needed to do was open up and talk to them about everything. So at the minute, I'm all good.
Can I ask you about the leather jacket you were carrying on the night?
Yes, I bought a leather jacket in America about a month before the attack, and I had it in my hand during the attack, and a couple of weeks later in hospital, Manchester police returned the jacket to me, which was incredible that they found it. Mm. And it still has kind of small tears and holes in it, but it's my favourite jacket and I wear it out wherever I can because it reminds me of what I've been through, but it was still my favourite jacket and it gives me happy memories rather than sad ones.
That's great. What a remarkable jacket that is, and the associations with what should just be a piece of clothing, but of course it's much more than that. It's a survivor's uniform or, you know, cape almost. So good on you. Not only that, but you've raised a lot of money for the Royal Manchester Children's Hospital.
Yes. I think we've raised about 65,000 now.
Congratulations.
Royal Manchester Children's Hospital. So yeah, they're incredible, and I just needed to find a way to give something back to them.
Good on you. What's the dream, Freya? What's the plan?
To become an actress.
Okay. Escape from reality forever.
Yes, I would love that. Okay. Yeah, I always loved acting when I was little, and definitely before the 22nd of May, I didn't even think about that as a career because I thought, oh, there's no way. But obviously now I'm just learning to live life more, so why not go for it?
Yeah, follow that dream, Freya. It's really good to talk to you. I wish you and your sister and your mum and dad the very best of luck, and Nell's family too, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Yeah, really nice to talk to you. Freya Lewis is... what a remarkable story, isn't it? And she is the author of that book about her life story and that awful event. What Makes Us Stronger is the name of that book by Freya Lewis. I enjoyed, if that's the right word, talking to her, but she was smart and strong. And that's what we want in the world. That's what we need in the world. 51551. The most poignant part of that story was Freya saying that her worst injury was losing Nell. What an articulate young lady, says Noeline. I agree. And Sharon in Dublin says, I'm in tears listening to that beautiful young girl. So sad to hear about the loss of Nell. Another says, what a beautiful girl she is. I'm in tears listening. My two girls, 13 and 16 at the time, went to see Ariana Grande the previous Saturday in the Three Arena. When I heard the news early on Tuesday morning, it felt so close to home, and they're complete cowards to target young, innocent kids in such a barbaric way. Hope she continues her road to recovery. Thank you indeed for those. And we'll be back with more after this. Tricia Lewis, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
It's been a while.
It has.
But you're here.
I'm here and I'm as happy as ever.
I'm delighted to hear that. We've spoke, just to remind people who might have missed you either here or on the Late Late Show with us. We spoke some time ago when you were about your story that really saw you very, very overweight, very, very unhappy, and kind of just thinking about whether it's all worth it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Whether I was going to continue on or just finish it all up.
And what just remind us what brought you to that point, because it was a bleak time. We don't have to dwell on it, but just to put the whole thing into context.
So I suppose my story is I would have reached 27 stone on the scales from MXM, and I would always have been a very happy person. I've 8 sisters, I've great crack every day. But then I found maybe 2016 and 2017 that weight had finally took over, and I just wasn't happy anymore. And I found myself kind of nearly at a crossroads, and thankfully I went down the right road. And I'm sitting here now today as Tricia Lewis, as Tricia Transformation.
Oh, brilliant. And your Instagram account is one of the great ones in Ireland. People just love to follow you and see how you're all getting on. And how much weight did you lose today, Tricia?
I've 8 stone gone.
Congratulations.
And I have about another, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I have another 6 stone to go, and I don't care. I love it. It'll go.
And you're on the road, are you? You're on the right road.
Yeah, I am. Like, I think, obviously my goal was to lose it quicker. So I think the key is I've never changed my goal. I just adjusted the time frame a small bit.
Okay, well, that's very... I've always been struck. One of the reasons I like you so much, Tricia, is always struck by your attitude. Like, of course, everyone gets down, and of course, people sometimes face bleak times, but you always seem to pull yourself back again from the front and keep the best side out. Where does that come from?
Probably from my mother. She would be very like that. But I think it's from years of I give up on myself. So I just made a promise when I started that I wasn't going to do that anymore. And like, sometimes on this whole diet culture, you kind of punish yourself if you overeat or something, or you go on a night out and you have a bag of chips. And it's kind of taught you that on the Monday you struggle. So then I decided that if I was walking down Grafton Street and I fell upside down, like, I'm not going to lie there and be like, take me, I'm ready to go. You know, you get back up and you just reset. So that's what I do with my whole attitude towards life. If it goes wrong, deal with it and move on.
Okay, well, that's the kind of attitude I think a lot of us kind of need now more than ever. How's life been since the COVID has visited our world?
Oh, my God. It's been a roller coaster, I'll be honest. The first few weeks, I struggled really badly. I was up in a heap. I was having glasses of wine for breakfast. I was like, oh, my God, like, I've lost my personal trainer. I'm the executive head chef of Jacob on the Mall, and on my 13th anniversary, I was laid off. I was like, oh,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it was gas, like, I'll be back. But I was like, oh, thanks, lads. Great present. But then I just took back control, because the only thing you can do is control the controllables, and I can just control my nutrition, my exercise, my water, my sleep. I can't control COVID-19.
That's for sure. I'd like to go back a step there to that, to you trying to cope with life at the beginning of the pandemic. Was it because it was all so big and scary? Is that what was freaking you out?
Yeah, and it was. I felt a little bit hard done by, which is really, like, in a weird way, that I was like, oh, everything was going right for me. I had my book launch. And then I kind of was in that phase for about a week. And then I just kind of felt I was just very overwhelmed. I was like, I can't do a squat without somebody beside me. But that's your inner. So I just changed my inner belief. And I was like, no, you can do it. If 26 stone Trish could walk into the gym, 18 stone Trish can squat in the sitting room at home. So I eventually just took back a little bit of control. And then it was much easier. But it was very overwhelming, because I suppose there was a lot of time I was on my own again, and all those feelings of loneliness came back, and I seem to have adapted food to that again. But thankfully, I'm in a space now where I can identify the triggers.
Gosh, you're brilliant. I mean, it's the sense you're speaking. And I love your honesty as well, that, you know, that great word you use about the virus, overwhelmed. You know, when it started off and we were just trying to, even looking at the yellow signs around the place and arrows and, you know, don't go out, stay in. It was like something out of 1984, you know. It was kind of terrifying. We're used to it now and we've adapted more and more, but it was overwhelming, wasn't it?
100%. And I know a lot of people have struggled in it, and a lot of people will contact me daily saying that I'm up a pound and I'm up a stone and
sure,
how do I do this? And that's okay too, because I think we need to give ourselves a chance. Like, this is unprecedented times.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it, so I'm sorry about the Mars bar. But it's just all about resetting and moving on.
You got a standing ovation on the Late Late Show. Do you remember that?
Oh, do I what?
did that have an effect on you?
It did. It made me, it kind of nearly increased the value I had in myself. I at that stage of my journey, I was very happy. But the Late Late Show was a huge turning point for me. I was like, oh my God, I'm me. And I was loved for me. And it was a huge moment for me.
And you've gone on now to become a kind of, you know, an iconic figure in the world of transformation. No, but you have, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. And it's so cool. Like, having those amount of followers is kind of like a loaded gun. I'm like, oh God, don't do anything bad. but it's so much fun and it's so cool. Like, I finally feel like somebody after years of kind of never giving myself the chance. Now I'm like, I'm a new lamb around the field.
I like that. Speaking of which, where are you living now? Did you have to kind of move digs?
Yeah. So I moved home and I'm living with mum and dad. Hey lads, 32. Hard to see the back of me.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, but it's amazing because my sisters all live around there and, you know, I'm out in the Galaxy Mountains. It's the country, so I'm very grateful that for what I have. I kind of look on the bright side of everything.
Roisin is in the sunny southeast. She says, Tricia is such an inspiration on her Instagram stories and I just love watching her every day. I can't wait to read her book. I mean, when you started out on this great adventure, I wonder, did you know that you would have ended up, as I say, on TV, even on the radio, and then with your own book out? I mean, you've really become the master of your own universe.
Really don't do things by half, do I?
No, but that's the way to do it.
Yeah, no, I'm very proud. And I often think, like, if the day before, let's say I joined the gym, if someone had told me that I'd be on the Late Late Show, that I would have my own book, that I would lead 7,000 women around Cork City in a run, that I would wear a dress without tights and I'd be able to tie my shoelaces, I would have thought that person was mocking me. So I'm so proud of where I've come from.
So tell us about the book. It's a beautiful production, by the way. So thank you for giving me a copy of it. I appreciate it. It's gorgeous. I'm very proud. Can I be proud of you, or is that patronising?
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful.
No, I'm happy for you.
I'm going to hold on to that for a good year.
But it's called Tricia's Transformation. Talk to us about the book and where it came from and what you put into it.
With the book, it's called Tricia's Transformation, and I decided that I was going to do a cookbook. As a chef, I don't want to lose the flavour with my diet because I think that's not right. Sustainable. But then I decided that I was going to put in half it as my story. And when I was writing it and I had sent it on to Gil, who were my publishers, who were amazing, they were like, you sure you want to put in all these details? And I was like, 100%. So with the book, I just decided I would tell my story with the truth. Then it sounds like such a cliche, Ryan, but I know there's someone listening somewhere or they might read the book. And if that changes their life, then I'm delighted because I put in everything. I put in the part with the Samaritans. I put in the part where I just was mocked and I was bullied. But all of that, and if that has happened to somebody, my advice to them is they have to move on because hurt people will always hurt people. And the way I deal with someone after mocking me or calling me fat or white load coming, etc., it was done to them. So just stop the cycle and move on.
Amazing. And with the books, it was a lovely idea to tie in your own story, by the way, with, as you say, unvarnished, which I love, and then the recipes that you learn from that are actually tasty rather than just having to eat horrible stuff. But I think this is what separates you from the pack, from people who have had transformations in their lives, because your story is, it's a tough one, but you're not afraid to share it, warts and all.
No, because that's, I think, the biggest part of my transformation. I think we do see with weight loss, and I kind of started to do it where I was like, oh, God, look how big I was there, and oh, God, look how bad my face was. And it was my sister who nipped me in the bud, and she was like, can you stop being so cruel? Because that's the Trish we loved. So with the book, I kind of wrote it with my 26-year-old Trish in mind, that I didn't mind her then, but I was going to tell her story, and I was going to tell her unvarnished with respect. So that's what I love.
You talk about her like she's another person.
Yeah.
Is she another person? Was she another person?
She was. She was. And I feel very sad for her sometimes. So, and I know it probably sound like, they're probably like, oh God, the men in the white coats are going to come to this lady. I'm like, oh Trish, what did you say again? But I do see her as a totally different person. But I see her with a different light. I don't see her as I hate her. I don't see it as a bad time. Like, I see it as a girl who really struggles, and I didn't mind her then, but I certainly am going to mind her now. And the crazy part is she's probably stronger and braver than I am now. Like, she was the one that walked into the gym that day in a pair of black pyjamas because nothing fitted her, and she tried for me. So I'm going to, and I think that's the key with weight loss. You need to love who you are because it'll never work.
And there are people who are, you know, I keep hearing people joking about the COVID pounds and all that sort of thing. That's kind of more the fun end of putting on a bit of weight. But the more serious one is the people who are heading towards obesity or morbid obesity this morning and in lockdown. And they might feel very isolated and full of self-loathing, I dare I say it. Yeah. What would you say to them, Tricia? I mean, you're the best person I can think of to ask.
Yeah. I would say to stop crying. It's all right. Like, you know, I think you're very hard. People are very hard on themselves. Mm. And they kind of nearly see obesity as a negative thing. And I'm not promoting obesity and I'm sure. not saying any of that. But what I'm saying is you have a blueprint. You are ready to go. The architecture is done. Now you just have to build your castle. So if you're sitting there and you are just crying, my biggest advice is you need to get out of your own way. You need to stop thinking what other people are going to think of you. You need to stop thinking that people are going to mock you. No one is going to be as cruel to you as you are to yourself.
Yeah.
And the worst thing is, I remember people who say it to me, or when you read a magazine, well, if I can do it, anyone can. And I remember sitting there being like, well, you're not me. I don't want to live. Like, this is awful. Mm. But if I can come back from that, I promise you, anyone can. And if I didn't start that day, I wouldn't have found out who I was. So can you imagine who you would be if you started? So I would just tell the person to stop crying. They've done nothing wrong. It's hurt nobody. At the end of the day, Ryan, it's just that. That's all it is. Like, it's not, you're not a really scary killer. You've just extra weight in you. And a problem that can't be fixed is a problem. But a problem that can be fixed is just an inconvenience. So start looking at your belly as just a little bit of an inconvenience, and that'll go soon.
You're a rock of sense. You're a rock of sense, honestly, the way you put it. You used an expression there that I only heard it for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and it was Adam Clayton from U2 was on, and I said, you look very happy. And I said, how did you manage that? And he said, I got out of my own way.
Well, I'll tell you where I got that.
Tell me.
My sister, about a week into it, Michelle sent me on a YouTube video of a U2 song, Get Out of Your Own Way.
No.
And I remember listening to it and I was just sobbing in the car. And she was like, keep listening to this when the times get tough.
No, I didn't know that. What a great connection.
That is so, when you said that, I was like, oh my Lord.
Yeah, yeah, wow. I wasn't expecting that. I'm kind of bowled over by that in a really good way.
Yeah,
because,
and I think it's amazing because you do stand in your own way.
You do.
You're limiting who you are. At the end of the day, Ryan, you don't care what I do. I don't care what you do. Everybody has to look after themselves. And just get out of your own way and just start squatting and start eating proper food.
And nobody's concerned about you or your well-being as much as you think they are.
No.
That makes sense. You know, people are getting on with their own lives. And you think, I wonder what they'll think if I... But actually, if you stop thinking about what they're thinking about you, does this make sense? Actually, that's quite liberating.
It is. Because, like, I think we focus and we put too much weight on other people's opinions. And then our weight is gaining. So just maybe twist it a little bit and go, okay. So, and Marie can't squat for me, so I don't care what you think. You just have to realise that we've only one life.
Yeah.
Go straight out that gap. Like, I've got children and nephews and nieces, and I'm going to teach them all of that. They can do what they want within the law.
Nice qualification there. Good catch. Great to hear Tricia on your show this morning. What an inspiration. Down to earth country girl. How amazing is Tricia Lewis? Fantastic girl. Well done, Tricia, from Eveline. What a wonderful, inspirational girl. A joy to listen to. Isn't she the best ever, says a text. She could be my best friend. I love her.
That's so lovely. People are so kind.
Yeah.
And that's what people need to realise is the people who are cruel and the people who mock you. Like I said it in the book, I'm not going to be a punching bag for the uneducated about weight anymore. Just silence them. Ignore them because when you're not giving them the tears. They're like a flower. When they're not being watered, they're just going to go away from you.
Like, you're getting better and better, Tricia.
I'm telling you.
I'm so happy for you. And congratulations. People who have enjoyed this conversation and enjoyed what you have to say, they need to get your book because I think that it's going to be a manual for some people to get themselves out of that corner they find themselves in. It's called Tricia's Transformation. Get it from your local bookshop if you can, but it's available, it's out there, and it's by a tremendous woman who I have great time for. That's Tricia Lewis. Tricia, thanks so much. Go well and be happy, and let's talk again soon.
And thank you, Ryan. I just want to say thank you for everything. The Night on the Late Late Show you treated me with such empathy and such kindness and grace. It was a true turning point for me.
Well,
so thank you so
much. I'm only as good as the person I'm talking to, and you're a superstar. Trisha, love to you. I'll see you soon. Good luck for now.
Bye, Ryan.
Bye.